Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2014. Lecture 17, delivered on March 27, 2014. The title of this lecture is Break-Even Analysis.
Today, break-even analysis. This is actually a practical topic. There's a formula. It's not hard to use it, and obviously you can write it down on a note card. But behind the formula are some important concepts in just real business. As many of you know, I actually run a corporation. I am the president and CEO of Emergent Light Studio. And the first thing that we need to know when we are looking at how many of a certain product do I need to sell in order to break even, in other words, to start making a profit, I need to know the price of the product. How do I sell this product if I don't know the price of it? Do I look around in ancient textbooks for wisdom? Do I seek the advice of the God of pricing? Well, unfortunately, with respect to the God of pricing, I found out that I have to be an atheist. There is no God of pricing. You have to feel your way in the dark. And I'm going to do this with a practical example, an actual real example. How do I price my product? Now, for the most part, the framed product that I sell, photographic art that I create, I mat, I frame, that's going to be in art shows around the Midwest. And obviously, you're going to have slight variation, not slight, sometimes rather notable variations in price based upon the venue. But you still need to get a conceptual framework. What is the average price that I am going to charge? So without further ado, for the coming art season, I am going to actually have you tell me what price I should charge. And if you think I'm joking, I'm not. You'll come to some of the arts festival this summer. If you do, you'll see the price you decided for this. For three works of mine, you're going to make the choice, the decision. Okay, let's start with this one. Isn't this a beautiful thing? Damn, you're good. How much? I won't pay that for that shit. No. Call it.
$400.
$30. That's what I got in my pack.
$350.
$90. Bitch. Oh. Work it. Go ahead. 129, what the hell? What is this, Walmart? Okay, so I got 350, 350, 4, 129, 50, 30. Averages out about 175. Okay, that one's gonna go 175. Next, on this side, call it. Please. Asshole.
650.
What is it?
275.
That's still moving around at 175 average. Okay, that'll be a 175. And finally, one last piece. Take this up to the top. Well, no, let's try woman, call it. A little higher on the average on this one. I'll need one more. Call it. That's averaging a little higher, about 200. Okay. Now, here's the dynamic. Okay. These are going to go at those. The first two are going to go 175, and the that third one sounds like it was about an average of about 200. So that's what they'll be at the art show. You damn well better be right, because I'll come and kick your ass and change your grade if you're not, if they don't sell. Okay. If I charge a low price, I'm going to pull buyers. I'll have more buyers, right? More possible buyers. That's obviously what happens, is that at a low price point, you're going to pull in the buyers. You sacrifice price per unit to gain volume. By the way, this is the practical application. In economics class, did you learn about what's called price elasticity? This is it. This is it. This is the real version of it. But okay, now, if I charge a higher price, I lose customers, but I gain on per price sale. So it's a balancing act. Which am I going to go for? And then there's another dynamic to it as well. Why would, suppose that by normal things, normal rules of business, I should go low on the price to get the cash flow, to get more customers to buy. But there's an argument the other way. Why would I charge high? What would be the motivation for me, instead of going 125 on each of those, and I'd still cover my costs, to go 175, 200 in the markets up near in the Chicago area, maybe go as high as 300 on some of them? What is this, what's the motivation for going highball on the price if I lose customer that way? Go. Well, I have to, yeah. In other words, well, that's one thing, obviously. I can walk away, sell two, and I've actually covered, you know, my expenses, and I can eat at Denny's. There's another reason, though, why I would charge high. I would highball on the price. What is it? You know? Yeah.
Is it to reach a more elite class?
You better believe it. I want, the price becomes part of the product. It comes to the point where there is at price points high, the price itself is part of the sale. And that helps me with those elites because they know that this is not going to show up in someone's house trailer in downtown on the outskirts of Decatur. They know that this is something that only rich people could afford. And that becomes part of the product itself. You aren't going to see this in Mom and Pa Kettle's farmhouse. And so there is that part of the pricing decision. When I price high, I'm actually signaling, riffraff, please stay away. And I have a lot of reasons to want to have the riffraff not come into my tent. If I have a higher price point, they'll come in, check a price, and then they'll just walk right back out. You know why I don't want them in my tent? For a couple of reasons. One is because the rich people don't like the smell of the poor people. I hate to say it. But also, I don't have time for those poor people. Because what they're going to do is, you know what they're going to do? They're going to come in that tent, and they're going to look at my stuff. You know, I got some pictures here on my cell phone. Let me show you these. I swear to God, every time. If they don't get out of my tent, they're going to pull out their damn cell phones and show me their stupid-ass pictures of their dog and all that and their sunsets. And then I'm standing there trying to be nice to them because I can't say, well, you get the hell out of my tent because that makes me look like an idiot and an asshole. And yeah, that's what I want to do. Last time, there were these people that were just, they just kept wanting to show me their pictures. And this one guy, yeah, here's one I got of my dog. Hey, want to see some of my wife? Look at this. I don't want to see that. Is that a tattoo? No. You don't want that in your establishment unless that is what you want to do. If it's what you want to do, go with it. But you have to make a decision one way or the other. And unfortunately, there is no God of pricing. Now, you might learn in some classes, well, what you do to get your prices, you look at comps. You know what I mean by, have you heard the term comp yet? It's a comparable product. Look at what they're charging. There's your price. Why is that a really bad idea? Why is the comp approach a bad idea? Talk to me. This is real business. In other words, this is not just academic theory. This is how it actually happens. What's the problem with doing a comp? Can you think of a reason why I wouldn't look at comparable products and price on them? Go ahead. Well, there's actually an important thing. I don't know how their product came together, but for all I know, they just bought it from China and they're popping it up in their display areas. That's one issue right there. There's another issue too.
Isn't it from white noise, then?
You better believe it. In other words, I am thereby conceding you're my competitor. Here, I'll price with you. Yep, we're buddies. We're battling together here, living together, loving together, selling our stuff together. I don't want to be his buddy. I don't want to be his price. I'm going to find any price in the galaxy other than his price, because if I put my price as his price, then ours are substitutes. And I don't want to be a substitute for him. I don't even like him. He's ugly, and his mama wasn't even fun. That's the dynamic that goes into the pricing decision. So one of the things that happens in a finance course is we talk about the formulas, and we have to in the abstract. But when you guys are out there in real business, whether you run your own business or you work for someone else in business, you find out that there is fire and shrapnel at the corner of 5th and Main. You read about it in the books, but when you get out there, you are going to be facing those kinds of decisions. And there's no clear, well, do it this way. You have to kind of feel your way in the dark. So one of the ways I feel my way in the dark is I've now got prices on 3 of my products, thanks to you guys. And I got it free. I didn't even have to pay a consulting fee. Appreciate it. Let me show you, break even. Break-even analysis, essentially, well, like I said, all we're trying to do is say, what is the number of units I have to sell of a product to make a profit on it? But if we take it in sort of a partial accounting sense, we would say, well, the profit is going to be your revenues minus your costs. And you might say, well, duh. Work it down from there a little bit. But remember that your revenues are going to be your price times the quantity you sell. 30 units at $10 each, that's $300. That's your revenue. And that's pretty easy to do. That's pretty obvious. The somewhat less obvious part is cost, because you see your costs are made up of two different animals that I've talked about in this class before, your variable costs and your fixed costs. The variable costs are hooked to the number of units you sell, your quantity. So if my cost per unit, and we spend a lot of time, I don't know if you did this in cost accounting, but did you learn about trying to find the cost per unit of products in your intro class in cost accounting? If you didn't, you probably run into it somewhere. That's something that we want to know, the direct specific costs of making a product. In the case of something like this, one of these pieces of art, there is the cost of the frame, there's the cost of the mat, double mats. You notice I use double mats. That's essentially a product differentiation sort of thing to make them look more upscale. And also the paper and the inks. Now, those are pain in the ass to estimate, but you can do it, and you really have to do it if you want to play the game seriously. Your variable cost. And there are some opportunity costs involved, too. But these, in other words, are some value per unit, cost per unit, the variable cost per unit, little v, times the number of units that you're going to sell. And then this fixed cost is just sitting there like a big fat lump of dirt. It doesn't change with how many of them you bring to the table. Like, for example, your dream was to start making dried flower arrangement baskets. Well, now, your variable cost would be the cost of the dried flowers, the cost of the basket, and the cost of the ribbon. And, of course, being a sensitive sort of guy, you also want to put in a little potpourri for that nice smell. I recommend lavender. It's really good. And of course, obviously, you put in love. But who can measure love? I can, $35. But that's something we talked about before. Okay, but you see, you're going to have to sell those. And so you're going to have to rent a booth at county fairs and things like that. That is a fixed cost. Whether you sell no units, one unit, or a million units, you still had to pay that cost. It was just sitting there parked on it. So that's going to be that's your hole. That's the hole that you have to crawl out of in order for you to get to the point where you can actually make a profit. It's just there. It's going to sit there like a... If you think about linear algebra, it's that y-axis. It's the axis of profit. You are negative profit right off the bat, your fixed cost. And then from there, you crawl out of your hole. So... profit is going to be your price per unit times the number you sell minus your variable cost per unit times the number of units you sell minus, distributing that minus sign, minus your fixed cost. So your profit is going to be equal to, and I'm going to factor out the Q so that I have... the price per unit minus the variable cost per unit times Q minus your fixed cost. Now, I'm going to tell you something about this little equation here. And this, if you notice, this is actually a linear equation. If you remember your dark days of algebra, y equals mx plus b. You remember that slope-intercept form of a linear equation, y equals mx plus b? Well, this is it. Your x is your quantity, your independent variable. Your y is your profit, your dependent variable. Little p minus little v is your slope of your profit line. And negative fc, that's b. That's your y-intercept. So in other words, what I could do is I could actually say, oh, I see. If the y-axis is profit... and the x-axis is quantity. In other words, this is actually a line where the y-intercept is negative fixed cost, the hole that you're crawling out of. And then the slope of this thing is the slope, m from y equals mx plus b, is p, little p minus little v. Now, I don't want to get too into algebra here. I'll have to a few pieces here. But notice something about this. The harder your fixed costs, the bigger the hole. That's almost like a duh. At least we're confirming with our math what we know in reality. The deeper your fixed costs that you're going to put into the project, the more you're going to have to climb out. But notice something else. The price per unit minus the variable cost per unit. I haven't heard this term in a long time, and I don't think the book uses a term, but we used to, back in the day, call that price per unit minus variable cost per unit, we would call that your unit margin. We call that the unit margin. And I'll use that term. It'd be nice to bring it back. If you have an old boss someday, he'll say, well, you know that term. Yeah, well, your unit margin. Notice that the bigger the spread between the price you charge and the variable cost per unit, the steeper this line is, the faster you crawl out of your hole. That's why you want to talk about that unit margin. Keep that spread as good as you can. Look for the price point that will buy you as much distance as possible between your price per unit and your variable cost per unit. And then you want to think, well, that's kind of a duh. But it's actually, that's one way to look at it. There are some companies where the genius of the company is knowing whether or not they want a giant unit margin or a thin unit margin. Here's the logic. I'm going to draw two different profit lines for you. Here is a company that has deep fixed costs and a seriously good unit margin. But here's a company that has very light fixed costs and a very thin unit margin. This is company one, this is company two. Do you see that in some companies, you don't need to have a heavy-duty unit margin? You don't have to. Because you are operating on light fixed costs, you can charge less per unit on your product. The great example of this, back from a long time ago, before the current day, was the small town barber shop. That you would have a guy, he would have a little building or a little space in a larger building, and he would charge $2 for a haircut. And he would actually have his cost for one haircut might be about 40 cents. Electricity, opportunity cost of his time, because he had very little training in anything else, his opportunity cost was actually not bad. A little Brill cream for the hair, a little dabble do ya and all that. And maybe some shaving cream if he did a quick shave on the back of the head to make it all nice and not hairy. But they survived. Some of the barbershops were in business from the time the guy left high school until he retired 40, 50 years later. How could he do that when he was charging such a low price for his haircuts? He had a thin unit margin, but his fixed costs were so light that he didn't have to have a lot of customers in a given day to still be able to make a profit every day. And that is the theory of the thin unit margin. The theory of the steep unit margin is that, okay, if you are in a real hole, you have to have big fixed costs to get your product out the door, you'd better find a way to get that price up there. If you can't get that price up there where your unit margin is good, you're going to have a long, long haul to profitability. And it might be long enough that you just give up before your time. So let's talk about this. Let me give you Okay. There is your profit equation. I'll write it down here again. In this Y equals MX plus B form, your profit is equal to your unit margin, price per unit minus variable cost per unit, times the number of units you sell minus the fixed cost. That's your profit. Break-even is the place on the profit line where you go from negative to positive profit. That's called the break-even. And the whole name of the game here is to find the break-even output level. How many of them do you have to sell? This becomes your first goal. No other goal. You have to sell this many. That's why you go into sales. They're going to give you a quota. They're kind of hazing you, but it's come back down to a real live business necessity. You have to sell enough to cross the break-even point. So every salesman is going to be given an allocation of quota, and you got to do that. If you can't do it, you're out the door. If you can do it, well, you're golden with them. And that's why the salesmen are, we all make fun of the salesmen, we all kind of trash them and all that kind of stuff, but they are the lifeblood of the company. If you can't sell your product, you might as well close your doors. Well, you will close your doors, not might as well. So here's the deal. What we want to know is what the break-even quantity is. We want to know where the profit hits zero on the equation, little p minus little v times q break-even minus fc. Notice this is no longer the variable q. This isn't a variable. This is a number. So that's why I changed that q in this equation to q sub be, because this is a number. This is no longer just a variable going up and down. This is a number. This is somewhere. Now, if any of you are into math, you remember that where an equation hits the x-axis, we call that in mathematics. Well, do you remember what you call the places where an equation hits the x-axis? How far we have dropped. It's called the roots, or the roots of the equation, the zeros of the equation. Don't you remember doing those quadratic equations and all that kind of, where the thing comes across, the parabola comes across, parabola, yeah, I know, I'm Italian, parabola. The parabola, I don't know why I said that. You go like that, the roots. In other words, basically what we're doing is we're finding the root of the profit equation, which has rather more significance. It is the root of survival. So let's rearrange it a little bit. I'm going to put the fixed cost on the other side, and then I'm going to divide by the unit margin, P minus V, and there is the equation for break even. There he is. That's all there was to it. That's the equation for break even. Now, real world. I scribbled these numbers down. I'm not giving you the actual numbers, but they're actually really close to the real numbers for my business. And some of these, really, in some things you have to say, how do I allocate a fixed cost? Like, for example, I have a printer. It will survive about 5 years. And it costs about $2,500. So I'm going to look at 1 year's cycle. So I'm going to just divide it into a fifth of that. So one of my fixed costs, I've paid for it. I've already paid for it. One of my fixed costs is a fifth of the total price of my printer. And then a camera, which will have a life expectancy in professional use of about, I would call that one 3 years. Running about $3,000, so that's going to be about $1,000 a year. It's a cost whether I sell anything off using it or not. And then I'm going to have some the part of my where I live that I use about a fourth of it, and at $1,000 a month, that's $250 a month for 12 months. $250. Did I do that right? I don't know if I did that right or not. $250 a month. Did I do that right? Yeah, I did that right. Okay, so that's $3,000 that I'm going to pay whether I make any money off it or not. This is 1 year. Sometimes I have to add things together. Sometimes I have to divide them up. And pretty much, there's some lighting equipment, some other things, some meters and all that. And my estimate on those in my last analysis was on a yearly basis, that runs me about $500. And this is actually not far from the number that's in my actual Excel spreadsheet, about $5,000 in a year, okay? Now, the variable cost per unit. Coming out of China, these are about $30 the frames are, on average, about $30 for a frame. Matt will run me another $12 total. So that's 42. What am I forgetting? So the frame, about 30 bucks per frame, Matt 12. The printing ink is the hardest thing, printing ink and printing paper, because you'll oftentimes have to run more than one print to get one that's right. And since you're running a printer with 11 cartridges, finding out how much per print is going on, that's a pain in the royal derry rear. But the actual number comes out per print approximately $8 for very high quality photoluster. Epson photoluster, heavy stock that's archival that'll last longer than anyone who's hanging the painting well. And yeah.
So do you not take into account the prints that didn't make the cut?
No, that's taking in how much it takes for my average print. The average print is going to run about 3. And so what you're really talking about is about a little less than $3 per run, on an average of 3 runs to get one that can be framed. So that's how I get that number there. Yeah, but you're right about that. I have to take them all into account and say how much did 3 of these cost to run, and then back that down to a cost for one print, which would mean that every saleable print is $8. And then there's stuff that you also have to do. You have to use glues and you have to use acid-free tapes inside. And then there's some other things that go in there. And that's about $1 per. $51 in variable cost. And I'm not the only one that does this. Almost any business worth its salt is going to do this basic kind of calculation work. And that is the work of... Some people say that's cost accounting. Others put that into courses or into learning cycles that are called production operations management, POM. But somewhere you learn how to do this because this is how you find to break even. And now we're ready to rock and roll. You guys told me that my art should run 175. We'll say it's 175 for all of my pieces. So here we go, rock and roll. My break-even quantity in a year will be $5,000 divided by 175 minus 51. And if I crank that out, whoops. $25 prints. Now, did you do that? You got 24.19, didn't you? No, I'm not going to sell 0.19 of anything. You round up. Always with break even, round up. Don't round down because you're negative if you round down. And don't give me a decimal. This is one place where you don't give a decimal because there's no such thing as a half a product or a third of a product. Unless you're selling ass, and then you can be half-assed. The hell with you. What did you get?
40.32.
Let me do it again here, because... Oh, you're right. Jeez. Ah! I got the answer right here, and I still did it on my calculator. 40.32. Yeah. I should have looked at my notes instead of trying to do it on the calculator while I was talking. 41 prints. Okay. That's five art shows for about, which means that at each art show, I have to sell five at, if I want to break even, I have to sell five at each art show. And that means starting at 6 o'clock to set up, then from 8 until about 4 or 5, and then break down and then do the same thing again on Sunday and do it again. So that just means that at every art show, my target is 5 sales. And if I don't have 5 sales on the Saturday, I damn well better have 6 sales. If I have 4 on Saturday, I better have 6 on Sunday. Otherwise, I am off my goal for the show. And the first show will be at the end of April. And when I go in there, okay, whoa, at that show I sold 8. Whew, that means that I don't have to sell as many at the next show. No, that means that I might, if I hold my target of 5 per show, I will be profitable for the year. So every time you're above your target, that doesn't mean, well, now I can relax a little bit. No, that means that you just hustle and stay on your target. And that means that you will actually probably make a profit for the year on what you're doing. Now, that doesn't sound like, well, that's easy to do, 5 per show or something like that. That is a real task to get 5 customers shut up to buy my stuff. But that's just the reality of business. We have to make a profit. And that word profit is such a dirty word in some circles anymore. But for God's sake, if we don't make the profit, we're out of business. And that's why this break-even analysis is pretty simple in a way, but it is the heart and soul. Take away all the calculus, all the statistics. This is hard and fast algebra, and the math goes down to numbers. And once you've got the numbers, there's no just, well, maybe I can just, I feel like I don't need to do that much. No, the number is hard, and that means that if you don't make that number, you end up being out of business. That's all I have for you. Go home.